I want to welcome all our listeners. My name is Ann Kelly, professional certified coach. And after I completed Coach for Life training in 2005, that was facilitated, co-facilitated by my guest today, Peter J. Redding, I was inspired to do a number of things, and one of them was to learn more about that unique, safe, and celebratory learning environment that I experienced during Coach for Life training. I completed that training through Peter's Foundation for Inspired Learning in 2008, and I also earned a Master Certified Inspired Learning Facilitator credential because I was so curious about that environment. That's what we're going to talk about, that learning environment that honestly just blew me away. A little bit about Peter. Peter's a master certified coach and a recognized leader in the coaching profession. He co-founded Coach for Life, the spiritually based coaching training school, in 1996. Peter's one of the original authors of the International Coach Federation's Core Coaching Competencies. In addition to being the originator of the Inspired Learning Model, Peter is a visionary who is changing the world of learning from a critique-based learning process to a 100% positive acknowledgement-based learning process. I'm really excited that Peter's agreed to spend some time with us today to discuss one of my favorite topics, and that is how the Inspired Learning Model continues to influence and improve how learners learn and how facilitators facilitate. So thank you very much, Peter, for being here.
My distinct pleasure, Anne, and thank you for being such a huge and spectacular facilitator and advocate of the Inspired Learning Model.
My pleasure. I have to tell you two things that went through my head just now. I hope you'll laugh. When I think of you assisting in writing the ICF core competencies, this is interesting. I always picture you like with the powdered wig that the founding fathers had on when they drafted.
It's starting to sound like that, actually. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we were in Philadelphia. It was about 300 years ago.
Oh, that's funny. But, you know, you just know they exist. As a professional coach, you know the 11 competencies exist. You don't always think of a group, actually sitting and hashing that out. That would be a great conversation. I'd like to be a fly on that wall. But thank you very much.
You're
welcome. So we're talking about the Inspired Learning Model, your creation. You've referred to that as the most effective learning environment in the world, guaranteed. So for listeners who may not be familiar with the Inspired Learning Model, how do you introduce that to a group or an individual who is not familiar with it?
Well, it's an interesting question because most people, when they hear about, okay, only positive feedback and only a positive environment, they go, yeah, but, you know, that, mm-hmm. that can't work, that doesn't work. There's, it's fraught with, you know, pumping people up when they really aren't learning, et cetera. And so there's an experiential piece to this that I think is really key. And the way I describe it is, you know, can you remember the time when a child, maybe your own or maybe a sibling's child or neighbor's child was taking their first steps? Were you, you know, have you been in a household where that took place, where they were taking their first spoonful of food or taking their first steps? And they go, yeah. And immediately they have a smile on their face. And I said, okay, so now I want you to imagine, you know, all the different things that are going on in that household when that child is taking their first step. And they go, yeah. My husband was running for the camera and, you know, making sure that we captured this moment in history, and everybody was clapping and cheering and celebrating, etc. I said, exactly. That is our innate. That is our inborn. That is our immediate visceral response to witnessing literally one step of one person's learning process. And so can you imagine then an environment, and the reason I say it's the most effective, you know, learning environment and model in the world is that it's natural. It's our natural response. And so everybody is in the form of celebrating that individual's learning in the moment without even thinking about it. They're not going to a teaching script. They're not going to their, you know, pedagogy, you know, theories of how am I supposed to respond to someone's learning. And so everybody's like, yeah, that makes sense. That's my intuitive sense of how we celebrate learning. I said, now, can you imagine if I tell you, I don't want you to celebrate. I want you to critique. I want you to make sure that you pay enough attention to that child's walk and find their balance. And if they're not balancing or taking their balance off to the left and now they're going to fall down and tip, I want you to critique the child and have everybody in the room critique the child to make sure that they can learn faster by critiquing them and letting them know what they didn't do right. And everybody starts laughing because it's ludicrous. Nobody can do that. And so that's the way I describe what we're doing in a more formalized session, whether it's somebody that's in their 60s learning how to coach, or it's someone in their 30s learning how to be a parent for the first time, or it's learning, you know, at 45 to figure out their career. We have arbitrarily adopted generational down, you know, from generation to generation, is I have an obligation somehow as a parent or as a teacher or as a facilitator of learning to critique someone so they can correct that part so that they can get that right. But that is not our natural way of learning or witnessing learning.
Witnessing learning. Witnessing learning, because we as observers have such an effect on that.
Hugely.
Yes. Yeah, and I got to tell you, I felt just a shift in my body, in my thought, in my energy, when you said now shift to critiquing that child. I thought, oh, it was like a weight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, talk a little bit about when this was new. Again, your white wig in Philadelphia. When this was new and you first began to realize that learning could take place in a 100% positive acknowledgement-based learning process. Share anything about that.
Well, in the first place, literally the first place where this came through, this is like a flash of brilliance. And at the time, it didn't seem like a flash of brilliance. It seemed like a flash of lunacy. It was like, how can that work? Does that work at all? There was the intuitive sense, number one, was, okay, so what I did believe in even then is what I focus on expands. Okay, so if I focus on the critiquing part of the learning process, as I was brought up with, you know, in grade school, high school, university, postgraduate, et cetera, in corporate training. What I focus on expands. So why in the world of learning, whether it's a classroom or the living room or the boardroom, why would I focus on all the things that are going wrong or are not correct or not done properly, quote unquote? Because if I continue focusing on that, then that's what I am going to be bogged down with of all the things I'm not doing right. Nothing has been reinforced of the things that I am doing right. So it sort of made some, I don't know, visceral sense that it might work. But I, frankly, I didn't know if it would work. You know, my conundrum is, if someone somewhere along the way doesn't tell Johnny that 2 and 2 does not equal 5, how does he learn that it equals 4?
Yeah.
I honest to God did not have an answer for that when you know, I was wearing a white wig when this first came through. So it was a leap of faith. Man, it was a leap of faith that, I think this ought to work. I've been guided by whatever that came through that says this ought to work. But that was the initial response.
Thank you. Thank you for putting us there in that moment. And that there was a, I don't know, but I'm led this way, and being open to that flash of lunacy, because look how far this concept has come.
Agreed. Yeah. Thank you, God. Thank you, Spirit. Thank you, Universe. Thank you, Cosmos. Thank you, whatever it was that came through.
Mm-hmm.
And the willingness to put it into practice, because immediately, I mean, I'm talking within maybe a day or a night, we were going to be going into a 5-day training to train and certify coaches. It's back like in 1996. And it was a leap of faith that we said, my co-facilitator, myself, said, let's bring it into a classroom. That's like, let's do a road test, you know, to put it into practicality here. And we saw the immediate effect of the students of, wow, this is a different environment. You're not going to critique us for what we do wrong. No, we're going to only focus on what you are doing right. But the other piece of it that fell into place right away was, it wasn't just what we think that you're doing, quote, well, or acknowledging you sort of randomly for things that you're doing or saying or responding to or coming to consciousness for yourself. But it's going to be according to a backdrop of the specific competencies that you're here to learn. So like I said, in this case it was coaching. And so it was, what are the competencies that a coach needs to learn and be good at? And when we see those appearing, when we hear those things coming up from whoever it's coming up from within the group, we're going to make a big deal out of that. Spectacular. That is exactly what a professional coach would do, is number one, not give advice, which you didn't. Mm-hmm. You held your tongue, you had to bite your tongue, your cheek, whatever it was that they just said. And instead, ask the client the question of what they want to do with that, or what's important to that regarding for themselves, or how they want to move forward with that, or what do they want to do to explore that deeper or further. And so it was, in other words, you have to come into the learning environment with that set of competencies in your mind, whether it's, you know, making a basket or leadership or coaching or, you know, woodworking, whatever it might be. And so that is really a crucial part to this whole thing.
And I'm going to ask you to say a little bit more about that, Peter, because you've been very specific in the training I've been the recipient of and training in this model, that our acknowledgments have a specific meaning. We acknowledge what we saw, what we heard, what we witnessed. We are authentic, and we're very specific.
Yes.
So say just a little bit more about that for those who may, and, you know, as life coaches, business coaches, we have to have a little sense of humor because we are, we make fun of ourselves, and we're the recipient of that sometimes, that there's maybe a perception that, well, you just tell me I did everything well, is one thing I've heard. You're just a cheerleader. So talk a little bit about more about competency base and how we are authentic in what we acknowledge, please.
Mm-hmm. It's based on our listening. It's based on what we call in coaching a coaching presence. Am I 100% fully here without my filters, my way of negotiating life? or business or leadership or entrepreneurship or, again, whatever the client is talking about, am I 100% present with them and for them? So there's a precursor here that I'm actually hearing, listening, absorbing, connecting with their energy, their basis in life, in it, where they're currently at. Okay, so that's number one. And when I'm there, then in terms of acknowledging them, I am also being a witness to who they want to be, who they want to be better at being, who are they, what do they want to do, and I'm seeing evidence already that they are doing that, which they may have already discounted, or they say it, but they don't even recognize it, or it doesn't click. It hasn't, the cogs of the wheel haven't kind of come together in synchronization. And so I have an obligation, I think, and a responsibility as a coach in using this philosophy of the inspired learning is to actually know what they're up to, what they're moving towards, what do they want to master, what do they want to learn, and when I hear evidence of that, to reflect that back. So that part gets reinforced, as opposed to them, you know, self-flogging, which most of us have been trained into a process of self-flogging of, oh, I'm not smart enough, I don't have it, I'm too slow, the person next to me is learning it faster, they seem so much better at it, I don't know if I'm ever going to get this for me. Mm-hmm. And so it's an antidote to all that very critical, self-critical mind that I have an obligation. Again, I feel I have an obligation. I have the privilege, frankly, as a facilitator of learning, using the inspired learning model to say, wow, Joe, could you say that again, please? I heard you. I mean, this is one of my coaching techniques. All right, it's a facilitator technique as well. Is like, wow, that's awesome. That's awesome, dude. Could you say that again for me? I heard it 100%, but I want you to hear it as you say it again. I really was happy with how I and finish the sentence for me, you know, what they just said, right? And so it's a celebration of, like, that kid taking their first step of, like, wow, Johnny, that's awesome. And he may have not even taken the first step. He may have taken the first half a step or the inkling of a step before he topples down off to the right. Woo, boom. And everybody's laughing and cheering and celebrating, and all the attention and energy, positive energy is coming to him. And he goes, boy, I don't know what I just did, but I'm going to try it again.
Yeah.
And so there's this, again, it's an antidote to that critiquing mind that is a learned critiquing mind, not an innate critiquing mind. I'm going to say that again because it's significant. We have been taught and conditioned to critique ourselves from the time we were 3 years old to the time that we're 73 years old. Everybody has told us in any kind of a learning environment what I still need to learn. And so we started adopting that, conditioned to do that for ourselves when nobody else is around. So we've talked to a lot of people, you know, adult learners, and I say, yeah, I critique, it's my dad, or it's my critiquing third grade teacher, it's my professor that, you know, in psychology that told us to always look at what we're, you know, need to improve or whatever it was. And so in this model, and it's the reversal and is magical. If it wasn't so innate to celebrate the witnessing of learning of another person or myself, this could not have the impact that it has in a matter of 2, 3, 4 days that I'm with my typical in-person class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By the end of 3 days, virtually everybody in the room is celebrating themselves, celebrating each other for their learning. Again, against the backdrop of what they're there to learn. And they invariably say at the end of their training, this is the most significant training I've ever been through. This is the most I've learned in a matter of, it's 5 days already over with. I can't believe it. I was dreading coming to this class for 5 days because I get so bored and so burned out with other trainings. So they've returned, here's what I say, they've returned to that natural state of witnessing their own learning. And they are celebratory. They are uplifted. Magical.
Their natural state of witnessing their own learning.
Bingo.
Yeah. And that was my thought on the in-person training that I did and the online training. And it started for me just arriving at the facility. That's not even a good word. It was the physical environment, one of the elements of the Inspired Learning Model, was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I mentally turned around to think, well, this is where the VIPs are meeting, not me. It had a view of the ocean. It was there was natural light. Everyone had a comfortable, more than comfortable chair. They were kind of reclining, if I recall. Everybody had, and this, you know my family, you'd appreciate this, everybody had a box of Kleenex if you needed that. We kid my relatives about, you know, you're not a natural born Kelly, you don't have any Kleenex in your house. Just, you know, if you needed it.
Yeah.
A table to put your drink on. You could sit on the floor. You could stand. You could walk. You could move. The physical environment, of course, was the first thing I noticed when I walked in. And it started right there. I want to go back to, you were talking about the self-critiquing voice that we hear, and you've mentioned that in the framework of the Inspired Learning Model. And interestingly, you mentioned it as it relates to connecting at a heart level, connecting with others, connecting with ourselves. A piece of that was acknowledging the self-critiquing voice and connecting at a heart level. And I'll tell you, I serve many clients, and some of them, right or wrong, I kind of go, well, they may be open to the use of heart level, and others maybe a little more of a journey. Can you say a little bit more about that connecting with a heart level?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite topics. Succinctly put, the heart is incapable of judging. Think about that. The heart, my heart, your heart, listener's heart, is incapable of judging. No. I do all of my judging from the chin up. So I don't want to let go of my very powerful brain, but I want to let go of my judgmental mind, my judgmental brain. I know better than you. I am smarter than you. Follow my good advice because, frankly, you don't know. I know better than you. So in that sort of, again, and that's how I grew up. I mean, you know, listen to me. I'm your parent. I know better than you. And I heard that, if I heard that once, I heard it 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 times between the ages of 0 and 65. Mm-hmm. actually, I dissipated around 47. But nevertheless, there's that component of, yeah, they're older than me. They have more experience in my business. They are my mentor. They hired me. They have a master's degree in blankety blank. So they are smarter than I am. They're more experienced than I am. And so, and my experience again is that people love supporting other people from mostly from a positive place, wanting to support an individual, but they do that by giving advice or through judgment. Okay, mm-hmm. No, don't do this. Do this. Out of the three options, this is the best one for you. I know better than you do, so follow my good advice. The heart connection is devoid of all of that. My heart comes from a place of humanity. I have compassion. I have feelings. I want the most and best for you, son. I want the most and best for you, spouse. I want the most and best for you, employee, etc. And so that heart connection is critical, I think, in a larger sense to our sense of humanity, our sense of, I feel your pain. I feel your excitement. I feel your energy of wanting to do your best. And connecting with that as opposed to a judgmental mind. That's why it's such a huge part. It's actually one of the major components of the standards of presence. There's 10 or 11 components of the standards of presence that sets the stage for how we're going to be together as learners. Now, in a formal setting, that's student and teacher. In a family setting, that's mom and dad and children. In a corporate setting, it's a fellow employee, mentor, boss, etc. But we're here to learn. We're here to further your development. And so that heart connection, if I can be connected at the heart level on a conscious level and practice that, don't let go of your awesome brain and your awesome experience and your awesome background. But in coaching, one of the things that makes professional coaching nowadays so powerful and so relevant is that we're supporting our clients to do their own work. Figure it out. What is your best? What best serves you? What do you want to learn? Where do you want to go? What are you passionate about? As opposed to me telling them what they're passionate about and what to do and what how not to do it and how to do it. That doesn't develop the individual. Mm-hmm. It doesn't develop their leadership. It doesn't develop their skill set. So this is across the board. I've witnessed it in a learning environment. I've witnessed it in organizations. I've witnessed it in families, family dynamics. I've witnessed it in marriages. I've witnessed it with relationships with kids, moving from childhood to adulthood and wanting their own freedom to adult children, relationships with older parents now your kids are having their own kids. So it just, that heart connection is the basis of, letting that other individual know that I'm here to support you in a way that helps you to develop your own blank, your own life, your own career, your own relationships. Wow. How do you like that?
The heart connection is really, I want the best for you. I want the best for you from the heart. And that is true when I speak to myself as well?
Well, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. That's part of that may be a roadblock to my learning for any number of reasons.
Yeah, people have gotten addicted to being told what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I had a 62-year-old man, I think at the time I was probably, 45 I'll say. So he was my senior by a significant amount. I mean, like he could have been my parent. And he said, I've been told what to do my whole life. And so when I started asking him the question as a coach, his coach, what do you want? What best serves you? What are you passionate about? He started crying, literally.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I don't know, Peter. I've never been asked that question. I've always been told, here's your path, here's your career, here's what you need to do in this career. And he was a very learned guy. I mean, he was a clergyman. He had been a military leader. He had been a parent. But he said, wow. In other words, that muscle within him had gone into atrophy.
Mm-hmm.
It had gone dormant. And he was scared to death of making some of his own choices.
The value of coaching.
Value of coaching, value of inspired learning, the value of knowing that the individual is innately gifted, innately smart, innately wise in terms of for their own life, and then given the opportunity and the space to figure it out. Wow.
I've often thought one of the greatest gifts of coaching is just that time on the calendar. I will focus on myself on Tuesday afternoon at 2 for 30 minutes. It's
priceless. Priceless.
Now, in my mind, and part of this goes to the ICF core competencies, you know the importance of trust, and in forging the inspired learning model, and this goes to a piece of that, to adopt a stand for innocence as part of the model.
Yeah.
I love this phrase. I've heard you say of that agreement to adopt a stand for innocence asks learners to, this is a quote, jump into the very deep end of the trust pool to become vulnerable. And imagine if that was on a course description. We'd like you to show up on Monday at this, you know, here's the classroom. And by the way, we'd like you to jump into the deep end of the trust pool and become vulnerable. So scary, exhilarating. So talk, if you would, a little bit about the importance of trust in any learning environment and in the inspired learning model environment.
Geez, when you put it in those terms, that really is scary.
Yeah.
Especially if they're not used to it, especially if they have been in places where there's not a lot of trust. You know, there's no thank you. I'm going to be a turtle today. I'm going to keep my head in, my feet in, my legs, my arms in, because I don't want somebody whacking at them, you know. You know, maybe trimming them down or cutting them or damaging me through, again, this popular belief that I have to critique people and tell them what they're doing wrong so they can go back and correct it.
Yep.
So this trust is earned. It's demonstrated by the leader in the front of the room, you know, whether it be the teacher or the dad or the leader or the manager or the coach or the whatever. So to demonstrate that, it's setting up some guidelines initially so that can happen, especially within a group. And one of the things that we put into place is we call it standards of presence. And it's, here's the guidelines that we're asking you to treat yourself and treat each other and be with each other and communicate in a certain manner that allows that vulnerability, that can enhance that trust of, okay, so this is a trusting place. And once that's established within the group, within the classroom, or the team, or the one-on-one individual, then nobody else is allowed to come into that without actually and physically agreeing to those same agreements. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's number one. Number two, in terms of the trust and the deep end of the pool, learning cannot take place if you have a closed mind and a closed energy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us that have been in any kind of training for any length of time, I mean, like, you know, more than 3 weeks, has been in a classroom where you got guys in the back of the room with their arms folded across their chest and a frown on their face and, you know, looking at their iPhone and, you know, seeing what else is more important for them to be focused on instead of, you know, the class and the content. And so it's, again, another reason why we have chairs in a circle as opposed to rows, because I don't want anybody to be looking at the back of someone's head as they're sharing.
Yeah.
I want people in a circle to be able to be actually be able to see everybody's facial features, everybody's communication, and be part of the group. They're literally a part of that circle. And with the ground rules then in place, the idea of the individual becoming more and more comfortable to know that they are not going to be critiqued. Mm-hmm. Again, I keep coming back to this critiquing business, because critique shuts physiology down. The mind narrows. The ears kind of only take in certain things. The physicality of blood vessels, it's been proven that if someone is feeling like they are being attacked, even if it's mm-hmm. compassionately or, you know, this critique is for your own good type of philosophy, the physiology of the person shuts down, closes mm-hmm. down. When a person is closed down, they cannot be open to receive the lesson, the mm-hmm. insight, the aha, the brilliance of a fellow student that is going through and sharing their aha moment of what they've just realized. When instead of giving advice, I ask a question, my client opened up, they were able to go deeper, their unconscious became the conscious. I mean, all of those kinds of insights get lost on the person that's closed down over there with their arms folded, head down. I'm not here. I should be someplace else. They've missed the whole point of that particular lesson. And now they have been robbed of the learning opportunity that was presented. And so all of this is like a big circle for me. If you're going to create trust and be trustworthy, don't critique.
Mm-hmm.
Listen for and acknowledge the student. And it may be in peripherally that you've just acknowledged the guy next to him for something
mm-hmm.
that they just, you know, added to the learning and to the group. And so they get vicariously, go, oh, wow. I mean, I heard 6 things that he did wrong. But the facilitator up there is acknowledging them for 6 things that I didn't even hear.
Yep.
I wonder what that's about. So it's the only way that an individual can be coached at a deeper level, number one. It's the only way that a learner learns is if they're open to learning.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to be open to learning is to create a safe space, whether it's a quiet place to learn, where it's a closed system where other people aren't coming in, you know, randomly and coming through the room, and who knows who they are even. I don't know why that guy just came into the back of the room to, you know,
mm-hmm.
he looks important and he looks older and he's wearing a suit and a tie, and who the hell is he?
Mm-hmm.
Then, okay, so who else would like to be vulnerable? Nobody.
Yeah.
I'm not going to raise my hand. So all of this goes into this building the trust and building the intimacy and building the available opportunity for an individual to be as open as they possibly can. So everything that I do in this inspired learning and in coaching and in life is to create space where it is safe for an individual to go deep.
Mm-hmm. I'm just letting this all wash over me. There's a white paper that you wrote a number of years ago. It's one of my favorites. It's nice. It's only about 4 pages, so it's a lovely introduction to the Inspired Learning Model. And I asked you at the beginning, how do you describe the inspired learning model to folks who are unfamiliar? And sometimes I will pick one line out of that paper. It's always the same one. And the line is, learning takes place when the learner is open to learn.
Yeah.
And I think the next line is, or maybe in my mind, is, and it's up to me as the facilitator to establish that environment. Because it's just game off if the learner is not open to learn. Everything else is for naught. Maybe I made my point and told you, yeah, you pointed to the wrong country on the map. But at what expense do I now have a learner, a client, a colleague, a family member who's shut down? Wonderful. Thank you. I have two more questions. One, I'm basically a selfish person, and this is one of the aspects of inspired learning that intrigues me the most. And this is one of the we've talked about two things: the standards of presence, which are 10 guidelines for groups to create that safe, trusting environment we described. And there are also 7 elements of the inspired learning model. And one of those elements, neatly tucked right in the middle of the elements, of the 7 elements, is inspired learners. Oh. And an aspect of this that I love as a selfish facilitator, I'm fascinated with the concept of designing an offering that will attract inspired learners who are perfect for that offering. We don't always have that luxury. I've done mandatory training as well, but sure, sometimes we do. So would you talk about the value of a facilitator's intentioning to attract learners who want and value what the facilitator offers?
It's an interesting facet to this. So there's two pieces, at least two pieces to this in terms of the facilitator intentioning. So that you're talking about like adult learning facilitation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where you're maybe offering a class on your favorite passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then intentioning those that would be attracted to learn more about that, perhaps from a master. Okay, I'll call mm-hmm. it a master. So the first element to this, again, is the underneath piece. And the underneath piece of this is that the facilitator of learning has the knowingness. I mean, the core, down-to-the-bone knowingness that learners are responsible for their own learning.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, I need to open up the top of their heads and pour in this knowledge because they can't do that for themselves. Okay, so that's like the old mentality of, you know, sit in front of me for a year or for 12 years and I will fill your head with all the things that you need to know. So it takes a great pressure, frankly, off of the facilitator because, you know, if the guy in the back of the room chooses to keep his arms folded for the 6 hours of training, then so be it. I can help inspire him to be open or her to be open, but ultimately they are responsible for whether they do that or not. So that's, mm-hmm. that's number one. Number two is terms of the intentioning of the right people showing up is to be as authentic as possible in the development, the planning. You may or may not believe in terms of you put out energy, even as you're putting together your plan for the training. And so people will show up vicariously, and you may not even know them. You've never maybe even met them. And it's through word of mouth. It's through, I had an inkling to look at learning how to work with federal employees, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow your name came up, or I was browsing through the internet, and you know, out of the million options that I had, for some reason I was drawn to you and your topic and your subject matter and your title of your class. You know, working with federal employees that have no money and have no staff to get everything done. Like in the Marine Corps, we do more with nothing than anybody else in the world. kind of concept. Mm-hmm. So part of that, a big part of that, is sending out, preparing for the class, understanding that, boy, I would love to have people that are ready to hear what I have to share. Ready to be in a classroom environment that is focused on supporting people that are in very tough places. I mean, whatever it might be. So that's a huge part of this intentioning business. And invariably, and I've been doing this now for, 23 years, we end up with people in the class that signed up, 2 days ago.
Hmm.
We have people that, were talking to a friend and had no intention of becoming a coach or going to a coach training class, but they heard something from a colleague of theirs, and the colleague said, even if you don't want to learn coaching, go to Coach for Life.
Mm-hmm.
You'll end up being a better human being. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it happens magically, differently. Yes, there's marketing. Yes, there's outreach. Yes, there's, putting things together. But basically, if you are a trainer, if you're a teacher, if you're an adult learning facilitator, and you have the core intention of, I just want to support people that are passionate about blank, to come to my learning environment, then you will.
Mm.
Oh, one other piece of that
is, yeah,
don't do marketing that you hate doing. 'Cause then that's filled with the opposite energy of, I hate doing brochures. I mean, back when brochures were the methodology, before internet even, I hated doing brochures. So we never had a brochure. Never. And people still found us. So if you hate doing websites, then delegate it out. Have somebody else do it. If you hate doing social media, then don't do social media. Because you're engineering it with the hidden element of the negative energy. That may sound too ethereal to some people that are listening to this, I'm sure. And it would have to me as a corporate trainer way back when. But I can guarantee you that there is more to attracting people than the written word.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. Yes. And I have a highly educated sister who I love, who's a longtime researcher at the National Institutes for Health, so a scientist to the core.
Yeah.
But she describes this phenomena as easy schmeezy. She says, I want my life to be easy schmeezy. I love that term. Why would I not choose easy schmeezy?
Yeah, it doesn't get more scientific than that, does it?
Right. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Not to mention, I've seen this rejuvenate trainers, teachers, facilitators, parents, who were just worn out from other models.
Yeah, that's another whole topic in itself of terms.
Yeah.
I think it's a huge part of the burnout of young teachers that are required to go in and tell students what they're not doing right.
Oh, yeah.
Circling the two examples on the paper that are wrong with red, minus two on top.
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to, fantastic, you got eight of them right, well done.
Yes, yes.
And it goes against the human spirit to be in a continuing profession that requires you or have you been taught to critique? So, I mean, that's another whole area that we could talk about.
Yeah, there are many areas, yes. Yeah, and honestly, you know, my biggest challenge with this conversation was, oh my gosh, this is, we could talk about everything. So how do we pick pieces? But what would you like to share? Two things, closing words on anything, and also what next steps would you suggest for anyone who's interested in learning more? We can start with closing words.
Closing words is, you know, take a leap of faith and try this out in a place where you're comfortable in trying it out. It might be for part of a class that you're doing. It might be in the next communications you have with one of your children, in terms of, you know, what they've done for homework or what they've achieved, or acknowledge them for a part of what they've done. So try it. Try it. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's I can guarantee you this works at all ages, in all training environments, formal and informal. I've had students use this with children that are as young as 3-4 years old. I've had it with students that have been in their 80s and are bringing it into hospice work. It works. It works. It works. It rejuvenates, as Zan just said, the human spirit, the human heart. Next steps, I guess, in terms of, you know, if you want to know more information, the Foundation for Inspired Learning, you can look that up on the internet. The website is www.inspiredlearning.org, O-R-G. There's some free resources on there. I think Anne referred to one of the white papers that I wrote many years ago. There's some interviews on there that other people have interviewed me about the Inspired Learning model from a little bit different perspectives than coaching. There's the Inspired Learning Model Handbook that you can, I think, it's less than $20. It's very inexpensive. It's about 85 pages of the guts of the Inspired Learning Model. And referred to the 7 elements that are all clearly articulated in the handbook with examples, how you'd go about bringing this into a more formalized training process that you're going through right now. And occasionally we offer certification classes. I'm not sure there's any up there right now. It's the end of 2017 as we're recording this. But check in with the website and, you know, join one of the classes that might be coming up. And have fun at this. I mean, enjoy this. Share your passion for what you love and what you love to teach and who you like to train, and get renewed as a facilitator of learning for yourself. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Peter. And I'll just add, this model took an enormous weight off of me as a professional trainer and facilitator to walk in a room or be with a virtual group or be with an individual client and absolutely positively know that their own innate wisdom would guide the learning. It's a radical shift from I am the facilitator in front of the room and I must present, I am the source of all knowledge. That's a heavy weight.
That's too heavy for me.
Yes. To I can be present and curious and self-responsible and open and facilitate this learning environment for those who are attracted to what we're going to talk about. Just a huge shift. And I thank you so much for that powdered wig and the creation of this wonderful model. Thank you. Peter J. Redding, co-founder of Coach for Life and co-founder of the Inspired Learning Model. Changed my life.
Wow.
Thank you very much, Peter.
What a pleasure, Anne. Thank you so much for today.